Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode, what episode is this, Sally? 759? 759, we'll call it. And we're recording it on Thursday, September 18th, 2025. And this is a show about technology and ministry. I'm Martin Spriggs, and I'm joined, as usual, by Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hello, Martin. Happy to join you today and happy to have others joining us as usual during our school year. So
go ahead, introduce them.
Yeah, we are welcoming back Professor Rachel Reno from Martin Luther College.
Dr. Rachel Reno. Yes,
that's right. And our good friend Jason Schmidt from the Oshkosh Area School District. Welcome back, Rachel and Jason.
Good to have you guys.
Thanks for having us, Sally.
Thanks for joining.
We're happy to be here.
Always a good time when Rachel and Jason joined. So more voices, more experience coming from different corners of Wells. So, and as usual, we try and pick a topic that is of interest primarily to our educators, although I would say those non-educators can hopefully glean some good stuff out of our show. And I'm thinking that this show will be no different. Sally, why don't you introduce the topic? What did we decide to talk about with Rachel and Jason?
I'm all about introductions today, Martin.
Yes,
happy
you are.
To introduce the topic. We're going to talk about AI, believe it or not.
AI
is our topic, but not the AI you think of, or maybe not. Academic integrity is our topic for today. And it does bleed over into that topic of AI, artificial intelligence. So seems like this school year in particular is starting off with a lot more emphasis on where schools are in terms of use of AI and students cheating with AI and all kinds of things around that topic. So good suggestion from our co-host to talk about academic integrity. So where should we start, guys?
Well, I think it's important to, like before we really dig into this, like really talk about how we got here, right? So, you know, if we think about like, this has been a hot button topic ever since ChatGPT kind of came on the scene. So, you know, like we see the changes in the way that students are writing and the writing projects that people are submitting and things like that. And as this technology matures, we're starting to really sort of understand, I think, a little bit more kind of the impact that this has on instruction and really like policies and procedures and administration are finally starting to catch up with where students have been. So, you know, we know that it's not like it's not going to be an effective practice to say just outright ban these things, right? Because that's just going to steer people in another direction. But we still have these concerns. And I think now we finally are to a point where people understand these things enough, not necessarily that they completely understand, but there's at least enough of a conversation going on that we can have productive dialogue about academic integrity and how that fits in with the use of these tools. Rachel, you're kind of seeing the same thing at MLC. That's kind of where we're at in Oshkosh. But
yeah, I think that we're slowly coming around to the fact that AI isn't going anywhere, and that we really need to, you know, take a good look at what it means to educate students, what it means to especially educate future teachers, and also just really what does it actually mean to cheat. And that's something I actually used to, when I was teaching a previous ed tech course to our undergrads. Like when I first got to MLC, that was actually something we talked about in our ed tech class, because so much cheating comes through technology. And because of an experience I had when I was in like seventh or eighth grade, my teacher gave us a trivia contest and I won, but I won because I used the encyclopedias to figure out the answers. But my teacher had not said, like, you can or can't use resources. It was just, here, answer these questions, and whoever gets them right wins a prize. Which I think was, he got me McDonald's for lunch, which was really nice, actually. But I remember coming home and just feeling so, so, so sick, because I realized after the fact that no one else had like looked up the answers. They had all guessed. And so I felt horrible, like I had cheated, and talked it through with my mom, who then talked to the teacher and was eventually was like, well, that was kind of the teacher's fault because he didn't say you can't use resources. He's like, actually, you were probably the smartest of everyone because you actually did use resources. And that's a little bit where we're sitting today with our students, except the resource is way better than the probably 1992 encyclopedia we had sitting on the shelf in our classroom. The resource, you know, AI can do way more.
How much more?
So sure. I think that's where we have to kind of shift that conversation, is where in what does it mean to actually cheat?
Yeah. So it seems like there's a kind of a tension going on between those that are building our AI tooling and the large language models and trying to make it as accessible and as useful as possible. And let's say our educators. It seems like every week there's a oh my moment where something has appeared in a, you know, a ChatGPT interface or in our friend Google Chrome that is kind of like an easy button to get students right in there, and very little now it's left. Now it's left to the teachers to kind of scramble to either create a policy or a procedure or a workaround or something that helps their students use this new way, this new easy path to their benefit. Rachel, you had one of those moments last week, right?
Sure did. And had to send Jason a mildly panicked text about it. But interestingly, as I am using Chrome this morning, which I updated last night, doesn't seem to be quite as prevalent anymore. But I will share my screen to show you what I was talking about. So last week, or maybe about the end of 2 weeks ago, Google Chrome introduced a homework help button. And as I told my faculty, Google's idea of help was a little bit ridiculous. And so when you would go to, this is a sample Moodle site, the calculus quiz, up in the address bar, you would get a homework help button, and it doesn't appear to be there anymore. So maybe Google listened to the outcry of teachers. However, it's just one more click to get to it. So if I click on my address bar and I go ask Google about this page, I get to select any text or image. So I am going to select this question, of which I do not understand what it's asking, because I haven't taken calculus in more years than I'd like to count. And over on the side here, it opens a nice little sidebar. Now, what's great is that it walks through the process. So if I had a better understanding of calculus, this would probably make a lot of sense. However, because this is multiple choice here, it just gives me, oh, the answer is A. And then I can go back here, I can fill in the answer is A, and then I can do that for the next one. And it will just keep going and fill out the quiz for me, which is not what our instructors are really wanting when we're taking quizzes. And what was most concerning to me, and I'll have to dig into if Google just got rid of it in the latest update, was that it was so very prevalent. I mean, it's still pretty prevalent if it's right on the bar here, but it is stinking easy for students to search and with AI and answer their questions without really thinking.
And if one finds it, it becomes a little viral pretty quickly, right?
Yeah. I was thinking of this from the student's perspective as well, that it's really muddy water for them if the teachers and the school policies aren't clear, at least, or if the school is leaving it up to the teacher and one teacher allows certain things and another teacher says no technology, no AI whatsoever. You know, so the students are somewhat confused, I would think, at this point, if they're looking at all the possibilities that are there.
Yeah. I would add that, like, you know, just besides setting clear expectations and transparency and all of those kinds of things, I think we need to have a shift in our in the way that we talk about these things just in general. So, like, you know, Rachel used the term cheating like multiple times. And as soon as you say, well, you're cheating, like, that's an accusation, right? And like, immediately, like, for me anyways, as soon as you tell me that I'm cheating, like, my guard goes up and, like, okay, I'm in trouble. And, like, there are all kinds of things that are wrong with this. So that's why I like the title of our conversation around academic integrity. So, you know, like, that's that becomes, like, you know, it encompasses cheating, but really, like, it's more than just that. It's like, how are you showing authentically that you actually know the things that you're saying you know?
It almost sounds inspirational.
I'm trying, Martin.
How can you achieve academic integrity? That's an encouragement, right?
Yeah. I mean, but it changes the conversation, right? Because, mm-hmm. like I said, mm-hmm. as soon as you say, I suspect cheating, that's an accusation.
Right.
But if you say something like, hey, I don't know, I'm not 100% positive that this is your work, now it's a discussion, right? So, you know, so it really, it's because, you know, we're working with young people, like, whether they're college students or, you know, or kindergartners, like, there's some, like, that's why we're in the role that we are in, to help shape their attitudes, beliefs, thoughts, all of those kinds of things. And the only way we can do that is if we put them into a situation where we can have these discussions. Because as soon as you just shut it down, like, they're just gone, and you've lost them. And now, like, we're not necessarily teaching the right lesson if we just go into this and we say, like, okay, don't use Chrome because it's going to let you cheat. Like, that's not the issue. So, like, what I would advocate for, and one of the things that that really is, like, where we need to, like, I fully believe that we need to address the adult behavior so that the child behavior can be influenced by the way that we're leading them. One of those ways that we do that is through clear expectations. So, like, setting those clear expectations up front is going to be super important and very vital, so that kids know, because if we give them, like, here's the line, we're most kids will say, okay, there's the line, I'm going to stop there. And then, you know, the ones that would pass that line were the ones that were going to pass the line anyways. So, like, let's have the conversation. That's a different conversation. They get to the line and then they stop. And then, you know, and then they go past that. So, sorry, I'm going to step down off of my soapbox for a little bit and let other people talk.
So
your soapbox is so right, Jason, because we can't put the genie back in the bottle. Is that what it is?
Yeah, toothpaste back in the tube.
Back in the
you know,
tube.
There's all kinds of pick your metaphor.
Yes.
We're gonna mix metaphors. We're gonna figure this out.
You can't put the toothpaste back in the bottle. There we go.
There you go.
So, I mean, AI is not going anywhere, and we can't just, it, you know, is some people compare AI's influence on education to the calculator. And I can see how, you know, that's a little bit true, but I think with a calculator, you could, you know, you could see if it was on the student's desk. It only really applied to math. You had to know how to use the calculator, and when you got to like hard math, like knowing how to use the calculator was harder. And like you still kind of had to understand some processes before the calculator was even helpful. And although it gave you answers, it gave you like very factual answers in a very different way than AI does. So we, yes, we can compare it to a calculator, but it's so much more in that, in the way that AI can not really think, but you know, do things that seem like thinking. And just we can't remove it. You know, you could tell the kids, put your calculators away, or you know, I can't see it on your desk or whatever. If they've got a computer, they've got AI. That's just how
Got
it
a
is.
phone. They've got, yeah.
So this is a nice segue into our topic. Part of our topic is on policy development, both for student and for faculty or teacher. So what I'm hearing Jason saying is, yeah, policies are necessary, but it's really the practical side of those policies. That's where that conversation happens. So, what does this policy look like in practice, you know, in the classroom? What does this policy look like as I, as a teacher, use AI and the transparency that I need to apply to it, or how I use it, how I demonstrate it, then how I mentor it with my students? So, I think everybody's probably still at that policy stage, and that's a good thing. That's okay, and we're providing some tools there. MLC just pushed theirs out for the graduate program, and I think they're working on it for the undergrad. The Lutheran Schools Office just pushed out some guidance for both kinds of policies, whether it be student or faculty, to all of our schools. So we're, I think we're making progress there, but that next step is just as important as not just the rules, but you know, how does this look in practice?
Yeah, and I would say that as these policies, or anybody who's looking at developing one of these policies, one of the things that you really need to pay attention to is the fact that, like we were saying, like you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Like this is something that is out there, and to either deny that it's happening or to try to set up such restrictions that you can like to avoid it completely, you're either going to be unsuccessful and students are going to find ways to work around it, or they're going to find something that's way more obscure and also way more dangerous. So we're going to be steering kids in the wrong direction by taking a really super prohibitive path on some of these things. So like the most beneficial thing we can do is acknowledge its existence, talk with our students about it, and then set up conditions for this to be okay. So, like, what does it look like for, and this is part of what we've been working with the MLC faculty, is we're using this AI assessment scale. So, like, what does it look like if you have a level one assignment, which is no AI? And what are the circumstances or the conditions under which you would have something like that be like, that's what we're going to do? Or what is a level two assignment? Or, you know, all the way up to level five, where just like it's full on AI, like all of, you know, you've got, you're solving problems, all of these things that kind of go along with it. And like, what does that look like in practice then? And then how do we communicate that expectation to our students? Because they need to know, you know, like a phrase that I hear a lot around here, and a phrase that I use myself, is an unspoken expectation is an unmet expectation. So, like, if I don't tell you what I want, how do you know what you should do? And that's really where, like, we've been kind of in this policy, procedure guidance limbo for like the longest time. And now it's to a point where we can't really ignore it anymore. So having those things in place, talk to your kids, talk to your students about, you know, what's okay, how is it okay, under what conditions can this be a beneficial thing, and then use it as that tool, like Rachel was describing, you know, as the calculator for, okay, it does this thing really well to this point, but how are you going to then, you know, use your human intellect and the things that a human is good at to enhance the things that are going on there? Or if I'm not allowing you to use it, here's why. And just being real clear about our objectives and our instructional planning. You know, it's not like I would argue it's not a good idea to give kids an essay anymore. Like, that's not a good form of assessment right now. You know, we need to talk through like what that might look like. So that's kind of my thoughts on that side of things, and just how we can maybe look at that policy development piece.
So Rachel, assessments. Go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, I love that you showed an example using calculus, because it seems like a lot of the discussion is around writing and having, you know, your ChatGPT write the essay for you or whatever. But it does cross over to all different subject matters. And everybody needs to be aware of this and looking at the policies and things. I think that was the main thing that I got out of the reading that I did beforehand and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So assessment seems to be the hot button. It's kind of driving some of the nervousness and the ability to truly assess the educational advancement of a particular student. What you mentioned, Jason, that writing a paper is maybe not a good form of assessment. What do assessments, what do they look like? What forms are maybe more useful? Which can be maybe modified if, proper guardrails are put on? What are you guys thinking at this point? And Rachel, question for you too.
Well, when I was testing out the homework help tool, there was one, I looked at it in a calculus class and a German class and a theology class and a science class, just for as far as the Moodle quizzes went. Mm-hmm. And the one question that it really couldn't do anything with was where a theology prof gave a term and then said, how does this term apply to what we've learned this semester?
Mm-hmm.
And all the AI could do was give a definition of the term. It couldn't, make any connection. It
wasn't contextually aware of real life, right?
So that's where those applications and connections that the AI can't make because it wasn't in class or whatever, that's where those application type questions, I think, are the most important.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that, Rachel. And if we're putting this into like education speak, we call those HOTS, higher order thinking skills. So, the AI is really good. It can be really good at composition if you provide it enough context. But if we're doing something like a quiz or something like that, you can reinforce that academic integrity and that deep learning by asking those higher level questions. So, basic recall and things like that, like that's not going to be something that's going to be very, it's going to be really easy to AI that, and it'll show in the responses that you get, because they'll be super long and, really detailed and like have way more information in there than you would possibly think that you would get with just a regular response. Right. So, focusing on those things like the applications and those things that get to those deeper depth of knowledge, is really going to make it much more challenging for people to use these resources in a way that you as the instructor do not intend them to use it.
Mm-hmm. So where does this leave tools that detect AI usage? I mean, there's a whole industry now around that. And are those things that need to be put in place? Are these things that, you know, if you're doing things correctly, maybe aren't necessary? Where do they sit? Should our teachers be paying attention to them?
So I will go on record as saying that these things do not work. Okay. Like they can give you indications, and they can give you like a degree of like, you know, there are some things here that I really want to talk about. But it is like it would be a horrible idea to say, I'm going to run all of my writing assignments through this. And if it says that it's 98% sure that this was generated by AI, I'm giving you an F. Like that mm-hmm. should never be a conversation or a statement that a teacher makes. I do think that there is a market for things like this to help curb that, almost kind of like to help curb that sinful nature that our students have, right? Like they aren't always going to want to be completely upfront about the way that they use something, or they might like be looking for that line and just not really know that they've crossed it. That might be another opportunity for a discussion. Mm-hmm. But having tools like this that are commercially available that at least give you some sort of an idea about where to start the discussion. Like, I think that's the really key piece of this, is that we should never use one of these tools and rely on that as the only piece of evidence. But what we should do is, in the context of academic integrity, say, hey, this was the assignment. Here's the way that things were supposed to go. You got flagged as like, this is 96% AI generated. Tell me a little bit more about your process. And now it becomes a dialogue and a conversation, because maybe it was just an unwitting, like you can't assume motivations, right? And if a student is really obstinate and says, well, no, I wrote the whole thing, like, are you really sure? Like, hey, you know, and then that leads to other things, you know. So then you can have kind of, you know, pull up other samples, or have them say, hey, you know, like, I know you did this once, I'm going to give you an alternate assignment. I just want to make sure, because it just really looks like there are enough things on here that kind of look a little mm-hmm. weird to me. So we provided, we're running a pilot right now in our district with a tool called Pangram. So Google, it's a Google extension. You sign in, you get 5 credits a day for free. We like with our pilot, we have access to more than that. But it's still one of those, it's one of those tools that I hate that tagline that says AI detection that actually works. Like I hate it because like it's. Yeah, I just, we'll get past that. But what I really want in the conversations that I have with my teachers is that this is in support of a conversation. This is not in place of a conversation. You don't get to avoid that conflict of confronting a student about something that you suspect is maybe like not necessarily what you had in place for this task. And you also need to just, again, open up that conversation. Let's talk about this. And then if it's a recurring issue, now I've got some additional evidence, but I'm not going to make mm-hmm. a decision just based off of one thing. You know, like I have to have that dialogue because that's what we're in the business of. We're not in the business of catching kids or policing their behavior. We want them to learn and grow. So let's have that discussion. Let's have that conversation. And this can be a tool that we use to support that.
Oh, for the simpler times where I could just pay the smartest kid in the class to do my homework.
You don't have to pay. We are, so Grammarly, which MLC subscribes to, currently has in beta a tool called Authorship. And that's what MLC mm-hmm. is kind of using along the same lines as Jason. It does a little bit different than Pangram in that the student actually has to turn on the tool before they start writing, either in Microsoft Word or in Google Docs. And then it records. If you remember, there was a Google extension or add-on or something called DraftBack. That would basically record a video of students writing. And so that it does that, and then also shows like where p- potential sources are of what the students have written. And I completely agree with Jason that this is, this is maybe evidence or like almost like hearsay evidence. I've been writing too many, watching too many crime videos probably. But it's a starting point, but it's never, the judge and jury for our student papers. And what some of our instructors are going to is if they have these questions, call the student into the office. Hey, can you just summarize your paper for me? What were your main points? And if a student did the work, they should probably be able to do that. And if they just wrote a good prompt and handed it in, they probably can't do that. So it's almost a little bit like the dissertation defense, where you have to prove that you know what you wrote.
Interesting conversation. Wish we could talk a little bit more, but we have other things to plug into the show. Thank you both, Rachel and Jason, for these real life impressions of where we are. Well, it'll be interesting, and this will not be the last time that we obviously talk about this either. So we'll put a link to some resources that we mentioned, along the way here, the usage policies we talked about, just as a starting point. If you don't have those are at least a way to get going and keep tuning in for more. All right, let's move on to ministry resources. Sally, what do we have this week?
Well, we have a resource, actually. I think we've mentioned this before on the show, but one that is worth revisiting as Sunday school and school year starts. People may be looking for media to support their Bible stories as they're presenting those in classrooms. And just so happens, I know the person who created an amazing website with all kinds of Bible lesson media resources. That would be Rachel Reno. Rachel, we're looking at your website here, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. And I wondered if you could just give us a little overview of what's available here.
Absolutely. So this was born out of a real, real want to not write a dissertation. couple summers ago. So this website pulls together pretty much all the YouTube videos and images and other resources that I've been able to find for different Bible lessons. So it follows the Christlight series of like which lessons are included in Christlight. And then it's got videos and images from Free Bible Images. It does have some Google slide decks that teachers have shared with me that go through the aim and things of the Christlight lessons. And then a lot of times they're also like printables or links to other activities. My one caveat that I always share is that I have not reviewed all of these resources and I have not watched all the videos. So definitely watch them, check them out before using them with your students. And then if you could help me out at the bottom, there is a link. If you find one that just isn't biblically accurate, there's a link at the very bottom to report a resource. And I do take down, I've only had a handful in the past couple years, but you can definitely let me know if there's some that shouldn't be up there. You can look at the site in a variety of ways by your whatever grade you teach. All the pages go to the same set of resources, but there should be at least something for, I think, every lesson in Christlight.
Nice.
Pretty impressive.
Thank you for doing that. That is neat. All right. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Rachel, you've got the floor still. What's your pick this week?
Oh, sure. So my pick is Notebook LM, which I believe that Jason picked a while ago. So, just got a copycat off Jason. But They recently added a video overview feature in addition to their, you can make a podcast and you can make a mind map thing. And I tried this out actually yesterday with a lot of college textbooks and maybe a lot of high school ones too, I'm not sure. The publisher will give you slides, a slide deck. It's usually a pretty terrible slide deck, but it like goes through the main points of the chapter or whatever. And so I actually loaded that. All I did was load the slide deck that the publisher gave me into Notebook LM and asked for this video. And it did a really nice job of kind of summarizing all the main points of the chapter in a fairly interesting and accurate way. And I tried it too with the podcast ones. Those are old news. But I plan on using this in my course this next semester to have students kind of look at how the AI did. And then compare it to the content that was actually in the chapter and see if they can see anything that that Notebook LM got wrong or maybe should have emphasized more. But it's a nice video. It's not too long. It's kind of entertaining. Like they're funny, which I think is impressive for a AI to be funny. It looks nice, like it's got a nice clean look. And I was really impressed with what it was able to produce in just a few minutes.
That's pretty cool, and definitely we'll be checking that out. I have a side story about AI, and that is this week, or since our last episode of Wells Tech, we've gotten a couple of comments on the page, and I'm pretty sure they were generated from AI. But the interesting thing is, they spelled my name correctly. It was like, "Great show, Martin and Sally," and they got my name spelled correctly and stuff. So I just see it getting smarter and smarter and smarter, I guess. It's just pretty cool to see the video side of it as well.
Cool. Jason, what did you bring this week?
Yeah, so staying with the Google stuff. So Gemini is my go-to generative AI LLM tool. And one of the features that they recently released is this has been available, like gems are have been available for like subscribers to Gemini for a really long time, like for over a year. But they're just now rolling those things out to the public. And one of the most recent gems that I just like I recently discovered and have been having tons of fun with is the ability to generate a storybook. So this is in if you go into Gemini, it's on the left-hand side under gems, and then you have generate a storybook. So what I did with Rachel's permission was I took a picture of her and I took a picture of me, and I used it to create a social story to help students deal with the overuse of AI as a way for them to respond to their assignments. So I had it use an anime style for the two of us, but you can make it into a coloring book. You can use a cartoon style. You can make it photorealistic. Like there's all kinds of different ways that you can make this look. But it took all of this that prompt and created sort of a story that then could be used to talk about some of this stuff. So really like the great thing about this is like if you look over on the right-hand side of Sally's screen, you have that listen button right there. So if you click on the arrow next to that, you can pick a higher pitched voice, which would be more feminine voice, or lower pitched voice, which is more masculine voice. You can make it full screen. So like there's a lot of ways to make this really accessible. And then the other reason that I really like this and a tool like this is if you're using this within Workspace, so like let's say you are You're a Google Workspace school system or school, and you have that Workspace for Education subscription, even if you're not paying for it. This is FERPA compliant. So that means that you can take images of students and upload them into this prompt and put them into social stories or any kind of story that you want with this as well. So a great way for us to create some of those custom resources to help support some of our students. This could be Bible stories. This could be you name it, like take whatever, let your imagination run wild. But it's a fun way to put some of these things together. And when you have created it, you also have the ability to export it as a PDF. You can print it off. So that is my pick this week, our Gemini Storybook Gems.
Super cool. Are you a Mac user, Jason? It's got you on a Mac.
I float back and forth between everything. I go Mac. I'm on a Windows computer right now. I'll spend days on my iPad. I'll spend days on a Chromebook. I'm Switzerland. I'm neutral.
Okay. All right. Very good.
I gotta thank you, Jason, for introducing me to Gems, because it wasn't a button I had clicked on in Gemini. And yesterday I made my own gem. I called it the EDT 5001 Professor. I loaded my course syllabus and the course expectations and all sorts of stuff into it. And now I can use that gem and ask it specific questions or get ideas about my course, and it aligns it to the course guidelines and student learning outcomes, and it's really cool.
They're so helpful, right? Love them. Yeah,
awesome.
One of the best features of Gemini, I think.
All right, I think that I'm up, and I have a pick. I believe I was turned on to this from Matt Miller at Ditch That Textbook. I follow his newsletter, and recently he recommended a new newsletter that was coming out of a website called What's New in K-2. So this is resources for primary teachers, and I've found it to be really impressive, just basics, easy to do things that are super helpful. And the one that I tapped into this week ties to one of my favorite resources, which is Canva. And basically they were saying you can go out on Canva and get all kinds of teacher planners, and you can use them electronically, or you can print them and write in them, whatever you want to do. But these are, robust, daily and weekly planners, things you might leave for a substitute teacher or whatever, that are out here that you can make use of as templates and create your own. So that was really impressive. And by exploring a little bit, I realized that there are accounts on Canva that create templates. So for instance, I clicked into Teach Cheat, and they have just a ton of resources. And this isn't like teacher pay teachers that you have to pay for these. These are just free templates that are out there that you can make use of. And you can actually click to follow the creators that are behind some of these. This person has 109,000 followers. So they're pretty big on Canva, and they're creating great content. You can read about them. Just make use of their templates. If you need to know something, about a world map or whatever, and you want it to your kids to drag their faces to their family's country or whatever, there's a template for that. It does say it contains paid elements, but I believe with a pro account, that's not a problem. So, and of course you can get a pro account as an educator through Canva as well. So just wanted to kind of turn you in or clue you into teacher planners that are out there, and then creators that are worthy of following. So that's what I got from this most recent issue of What's New in K-2. If you are interested, you can visit the website, and there's a subscribe button right up in the top bar. Might be worth hitting subscribe and seeing what they have if you're a primary teacher. So that's my pick of the week.
Nice. Great resource. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I'm last. My pick of the week is a tool I've been trying out for the past week or so, which I am really, I think, tempted to invest in. And that is a tool called Whisperflow. Whisperflow, they took out a bunch of the letters, but it's WISPRflow.ai. And it is in the, some of you old timers probably remember Dragon, Naturally Speaking from Nuance, and some of these things where it will take your audio and turn it into text. Some of it better than others. I used them off and on, but they were not super great or fast or always accurate. But the idea kind of always intrigued me that I could speak and it would just write. What Whisperflow does is it kind of really applies some nice AI technology to smooth things out for you. So it'll take out the ums and it'll actually even do corrections. So if you misspeak and you correct yourself, it will recognize that and it will write the corrected version. It does punctuation well. It does paragraphing well. It has its own dictionary that you can add. So if you say wells a lot, for instance, you can say that's not W-E-L-L-S, that's W, all caps, W-E-L-S. Nicknames, acronyms, which we're very fond of in the Wells. It does all that stuff. It is a super cool tool. One of the keys to a tool like this is it's got to be easy to use. And at least on a Mac, and I think Windows is the same, it's just a simple key combination. On the Mac, you just hold down your function key, which on my Mac keyboard is the bottom left, so it's super easy to get at. You just hold it down, and as long as you're holding that down, whatever you say in your microphone, it's going to pick up. And I've used different microphones with it. I've used AirPods. I've used a speakerphone. I've used the built-in Mac microphone. It picks it up beautifully. There's not one situation or microphone that I've used that has been a challenge. The free version allows 2,000 words per week. So I've been using it for a little over a week, and I'm almost at my 2,000 word per week limit, but I've been using it quite a bit. There is a version on Mac, Windows, and iOS. The Android version is coming. There is, and I don't know what the price is, but there is a Whisperflow for nonprofits. There is also one for educators, or a student discount, I should say. But I'm definitely going to explore what this actually costs if I'm going to hit my limit, which I think I might. But 2,000 words is enough to give you a sense for, hey, does this thing really work? But, you know, really, again, the difference is that the AI part of it really makes this usable. Maybe an occasional edit would be necessary. But I can speak a, 4 or 5 paragraph email and go back over it in 30 seconds and it's done. So it does a little bit of calculation of words per minute. So you kind of know what your words per minute is in typing. For me, I don't think I have that in front of me here. Maybe I can pull it up. It does give you, here it is. Currently the almost 2,000 words that I've used, I've been speaking at 122 words per minute. Mm-hmm. So I know I can't type 122 words a minute. So I'm fairly fast, but there's still edits and things like that. But I would say that this is a pretty cool tool. You can speak notes. There's snippets you can use. There's actual AI commands. You can highlight things and plug it into Perplexity and those kinds of things. I'm eager to try some of those things out as well. But it is one of the most impressive tools and uses of AI that I've seen. And part of it was I've got a little bit of arthritis going on in the fingers and hands. And, I play around with different keyboards and such. But if I do a lot of typing, It's a problem these days. So, you know, especially, well, I think it's my left hand that has more problems than the right hand. Not that I'm incapacitated, but this is a nice aid, especially if it helps. So that's my pick of the week. I'll probably come back, you know, in a month or two and tell you how it's going. But whisperflow.ai, worth a try.
Very good. Cool pick.
All right. We're closing in on the end of the show here. And the last segment is community news and feedback. And I plugged in an item here that many of you maybe received an email on if you get the Together newsletter, and you may have heard it through other sources. At the Synod convention, at which Jason was present, well, Rachel was too. We passed a new Wells strategic plan, and we've given it a theme and a website, which just launched, christthroughus.net. And I think this is maybe a little bit different. This is not your grandfather's strategic plan. It's nicely bucketed in different areas: culture, congregations, commission, and calling. And you can expect resources from our areas of ministry in all of these areas that will be very useful, I think, to you on a personal level, but also to our congregations as well. So if you want to learn a little bit more about it, the website, again, just launched, christthroughus.net. Take a look at it. There's some resources there. The whole plan is there if you want to read through that. Again, it's not, you know, kind of the dusty document that we've maybe produced in the past. It's nicely laid out, and I think will be a useful resource for the 10 years that the plan covers. So that's my little bit of news and feedback here.
Awesome.
All right. I think that's going to about do it. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Jason, for your input and your wisdom that you bring to the show. We look forward to having you guys on each month, and hopefully you'll come back again next month where we can talk a little bit more about educational technology, and, you know, maybe there's going to be some AI talk in there again. So that's going to about do it for this week. Sally, thanks for all you do. And again, a special thank you to all of our listeners. We do this show for you, and please reach out to us at our website, wellstech.wells.net, or email wellstech@wells.net with ideas, comments, feedback of any kind. Always welcome. But most of all, thank you for being here and your listening ears. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.